Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello to my peoples, what it be. Thank you as always for the continued love and good reviews on Huey Off the Record. We love making these pods for you, and hearing from you on the social keeps it up, man. Spread the word. It's Brooklyn Way, y'all. Now, if you haven't already, go back and check out the back catalog. We got stories for days from rock and roll insiders that you won't hear anywhere else. Tim Latham, DJ Uncle Mike, Goldie, DJ Di, Ricky Gervais. The kind of motley crew you'd only find with me, Huey, on Off the Record. So today we got on the pod a guy named Ben Collins. You might know him as the Stig from Top Gear. Now, Ben is a race and stunt driver who's worked on some huge Hollywood productions, including the most recent Bond movies. Ben and I met recently when he rode shotgun with me in a Lamborghini on a TV show we were shooting together. And in our conversation today, we get deep into car culture in the UK versus the US. He tells stories about the most badass stunts he's worked on in the movies and the most badass drivers he coached on Top Gear. And, of course, all the beautiful cars he gets to total for his day job. What an amazing dude. Now, when you do a pod with me, it's not just we show up and we chat. I brought a pack of Oreos and there's a little ear crunching going on. But, you know, that's how it goes. I'm telling you that so you can get over it because man's got to eat his Oreos when he's chilling with the Stig. Anyway, this is my man Ben Collins. So kick back, enjoy, and get some driving tics from the man. This dude's a G. We did it in the middle of a park in Bristol. Very cool. All right. Go. Well, I'm here with Ben Collins. We're not on the moors. We're in a beautiful park, beautiful day, chilling in Bristol. And how you doing, man?
Good, yeah. We're at the Dodham Downs. It's fantastic here.
Yeah,
the sun's up.
It is super nice. And I'm just making sure I got my wind sock on my thing, because people have been complaining about my lack of audio niceness.
Windbreak. It's a bit windy.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have one of those things. It kind of works. I mean, maybe we'll kind of break the wind. Oh, I didn't mean it like
good,
that.
Good sound effect.
Yeah, that's true.
You can put that in later.
Put that in post. Now, we met a couple weeks ago doing a TV show together, but I had known of you for a long time, and I know a lot of people that had run into you and said, like, this dude's awesome. And when I heard I was going to do this thing with you, I was like, I can't wait to meet you. And I think we met, and then, like, 10 minutes later, we were driving out of town in a Lamborghini together. You were riding a shotgun. And I tell you, man, we had a really cool conversation, and you're a lovely dude in the respect that, you know, like, all the things that you've done, I think have kind of gotten you to a really cool place, right? Like, we were talking about, like, family and stuff like that, because I'm big on my family, too, right? But we were talking about stuff like that when we were driving out, and then I forgot, like, oh, shit, I got to ask this dude about all the cool shit you do, because we were talking about other stuff. So this is kind of what this is.
Awesome.
But, okay, so if people don't know the show Top Gear, then they're not really too into cars, I would imagine. That's around the world, right?
Yeah, it's, I mean, the crazy thing with Top Gear is the way it transcended cars, yeah, so it's become a big entertainment thing. And for me, certainly when I began my time there, I was very camera shy, very happy to be on TV as long as I didn't get seen and didn't have to speak. So the Stig job was ideal, you know, that was got to do the fun driving stuff and get to meet hundreds of people for their training, kind of like what we did, the day out in the Lamborghini, a day in the life.
Yeah.
And just explore. It's just a fun way to meet someone, because no two people behave the same way, drive the same way, think the same way. Yeah. And it's fun playing with that.
It's kind of like you're jamming with people who aren't as good as a guitar player as you. That's kind of what I took away from me. Like, I'm willing to jam with anybody. It doesn't matter how good they are, because I have fun playing music.
Yeah.
You're the same way. I have fun, you know, with automobiles and stuff. And I thought that was really cool, because you were really nice to me, man, and I'm a horrible driver. I'm not horrible, but I'm not like... with that kind of car, I'm not like a technically great driver.
You think? Maybe. I mean, well, I don't know. Why do you say that? Because actually, you're pretty smooth, and nothing took you by surprise.
Yeah, because I didn't really rush into anything. I didn't think I was too tenacious when it came to a certain kind of things. And I think that just comes down to my age, that I'm just kind of like, I'm not out to, you know, to kick the ass of that turn. I just want to get around the turn.
Well, everyone has a comfort zone.
Yep.
So I guess on that track day we did, we started to tease that a little bit, and because you're pretty smooth, as you know, maybe you already knew that.
Well,
that,
I was driving through London. Anybody could drive through London and play hip hop music. Yeah. It was pretty easy.
I guess that's true.
Yeah.
You do find out more, so and you get information overload. I mean, I have vaguely tried to learn a musical instrument. It didn't end well for the instrument or for me, really. But you get to a point where you can only take in so much information. Mm-hmm. And especially with the time that I used to get on the show, 45 minutes was the max, but actually people couldn't really ingest any more information than that, and you take it in breaks, kind of spurts of 10 minutes until their mind couldn't take any more without a break, then kind of go away, reflect on it, come back, and it sinks in. And I'm sure it's the same with picking up music. And
was that something you learned doing the show over time? Like, okay, this is, you know, week 37 or episode 37. I got the 37th person. I have a curriculum that I can kick to them and kind of let them know what's up.
Yeah, pretty much in the car park before you even drive off, you get an idea of what you're in for, because you can also tell if someone's frightened or if they're overconfident, cocky, they know it all already.
Yeah.
Or if they're, you know, crazy, like Ranulph. So Ranulph Fiennes, who I admire greatly, he's a big hero.
Really, he was a nut.
Yeah, he's been in the SAS. He's been he's climbed every mountain. He's done every peak. He had a heart attack and then did a marathon in every continent.
Well, you figured he'd drive it like he stole it, right? I mean,
which he did. And I knew from reading up on him extensively. I saw this, he just gave this 1,000-yard stare. I knew he was, I mean, my presence in the car with him was irrelevant.
Right.
I don't think he was going to listen to it. And he shot off. And so I shouted at him for a little while, ineffective, so I had to actually punch him a little in the helmet. And then we were talking. So he remembered I was there.
Yeah. I guess with those types of personalities, it must be challenging to kind of get your point across to him without, you know... Because, I mean, it could be a really life and death situation if they're completely off the rails. I mean, that guy's pretty much, he danced with on the razor's edge for the last 50 years, so he's cool. Yeah. But, like, you know, like, you get some, say you get, like, some singer or something like that, and they're, like, in their 20s, and they're like, I'm just going to drive this thing crazy. And you're like, yo, you're going to kill us all. You can't do that, you know.
Like Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
So he was great. So he was fast, actually twice. And then the trick we always play with these tracks is you teach the person, you never show them what the maximum speed of that car is. You never do
that. Oh, yeah. You don't tell them that either, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So with Simon, we taught him, then I did a demo ride, sped around the track in a supercar, this Noble. And then they said, oh, hey, why don't you let him drive now? Which was never on my list. And if they'd asked me at the beginning, I'd have said, no, we'll let him drive the supercar, then I'll show him. And so he tried to mimic, and he was really a good mimic.
Really?
For all of four corners, but there are seven corners to get around, and number five was the 100-mile-an-hour, so we spun off. But up to that point, he was kind of hanging on. He was kind of copying.
Was he smoking cigarettes while he was doing it?
Probably in between. And not.
He smokes those crazy menthol cigarettes. He must have hung out in America, because they're like called Cool 100.
Yeah.
They're like cigarettes that you trade in jail for shit. And when I used to smoke, I hung out with him at some party, and I was like, hey, you got a cigarette, man? And he pulled out one of these things.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, you know, there's only two reasons why you have one of those. And
bad breath or jailhouse.
Exactly. And he thought that was funny. So that's how I knew him. But he was always like, he has that crazy, was it a Rolls Royce with like fur on the bottom? I mean, he's just out of his mind. And you could tell that he would be one of those troublesome dudes that would try to take the car like I'm God or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you could see him saying something like that.
He did it his own way, but he had a natural feel, so he actually produced quite a good lap time.
Yeah, he did have a good one.
He claims he cheated, but I never saw that. And I didn't have binoculars, but I used to watch pretty closely, and I didn't think he cheated.
Yeah. So when I would, we were talking, like, when you first started, you started pretty late, you said, in driving.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because I started looking into that, because I was like, that's not late. That's like where you decide what you want to do with your life. But you were saying it was kids start really young, right?
They do. They start age 6 or 7.
Damn.
I was competing, but in a swimming pool at that age, and that was a good outlet. That got me out of the house, and so I didn't drive my mum crazy. Get in the pool and just keep swimming until you've got no energy left.
Yeah, that's the way to go, man.
But I love the competition side, you know, getting those ribbons, I kind of lived for that. That really thrived on it. And I love the team sports, especially like the relays. I would always get the best time in that because it brought out something extra. So
you're competitive from a young age, man.
I loved it. Yeah. And then growing up on a farm, I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but we didn't have fighter planes at the farm, but we had quad bikes. So I used to pinch that thing and drive the wheels off it. And again, you know, there's a regular complaint why it's got no fuel and the tires are bald and everything. So I was driving this thing really badly all the time, though, learning kind of car control techniques and speed related stuff, but
trial and error stuff,
literally. Francis took a hard pounding and the quad took a pounding. I rolled it a few times, learned to ditch it a hillside up.
Now, acquired knowledge like that, and I don't mean to take it off on a tangent, but now, like, people could say, oh, I want to learn how to be a better driver. They can buy a book, for instance, like your book, or they can go on YouTube or something like that and learn tricks and things. Back when you had to acquire knowledge through trial and error, it will never leave you. That's kind of when we were walking over here and I was saying it's kind of like how John Coltrane can handle a certain bunch of notes at the same time and know what to do next. Was that, like, in you from day one?
Yeah, I just loved it. You can hear, especially on those bikes at like 250cc, you can hear the rhythm of the pistons. Mm-hmm. You know what gear you're in, you get a feel for this, and you're feeling the thing sliding, you're hearing the pistons, you're hearing the RPM, you're gauging the speed visually, and by practice and making a lot of stupid mistakes. But the great thing is where we live, there were buildings, there were trees, farmhouses and all that kind of stuff around, so you kind of had areas that you could drive repetitively and make a kind of circuit. So I think you learn by feel that way, which is how they used to race in the old days. They did before data and tech. Now I still make, there's no substitute for real life experience, but you've got virtual VR now with the games. Books I used to read up on, Ayrton Senna, another hero, like Gilles Villeneuve, these big heroes of mine, about how they approach things.
It's a psychology of how, you know, because it's kind of like any instrument of expression. I always think, I mean, your car is your instrument of expression. You can do it like no other person could do it, right? Because you're unique to that experience. And I always thought it was interesting when those dudes were writing books, because I'm not necessarily like a driver, but I like the idea of the human condition and how it applies itself to driving, because it's like a 20th century thing. It's not old. It's not like 200 years ago people were driving. Maybe they're riding horses. Yep. Is that like an equivalent?
It is. I think so. Obviously, the animal's got a mind of its own, but you're still feeling forces of friction. You're feeling the G loading. I mean, I went to Rome, and it was great to see, you know, the Colosseum and everything, but I've forgotten the name of the track there where they used to race. But they used to race these chariots.
Yeah,
and
I forgot it too. I was there with my mom just a couple months ago. I'm probably standing there too. I probably have a picture of my mom and me on it with the road sign.
Yeah, pick on those Oreo cookies.
Yeah, you want an Oreo, man?
Circus Maximus.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, and that's
it's a really great place in Vegas called Circus Maximus too. Yeah,
it sounds expensive.
Yeah, oh, it is.
But that's it was an oval shape like a hairpin, which is, you know. Speedway is hugely popular on bikes as well as in NASCAR and IndyCar, but those guys would have been with very, very similar forces, and it's just bizarre if you think that our bodies are built for running speed, but we adapt very, very quickly and powerfully to much, much higher speeds. Our brain is able to process information much quicker than we would expect.
That always freaked me out, and I thought when cars started going really fast, and even I guess that was the advent of like power to air flight, you know, like they were going maybe 50, 60 miles an hour in the beginning. That was like super fast. It was like double the fastest guy kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the brain does adapt so quickly. Do you think doing all the quad bike stuff when you were a kid got your eye hand or your brain kind of into a certain gear that, because I mean, do you do that with everything? Can you anticipate better than most people can in different situations?
I think with the speed thing, it's really interesting. So it forces you to look, to think further ahead and look ahead. Mm-hmm. Because if you're looking near focused, we talked about this on our day out.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's
that's what I'm asking.
Everything takes you by surprise. I broke your mic.
That is going to break.
I mean, the speed relationship, the further you look ahead, the slower things are coming. It takes, you've got much more time to absorb things. And then through competition, actually, my entire life changed because I realised I would turn up minus a sock or a, you know, a balaclava, or you leave your race licence at home. You look like an idiot. You're completely ill-prepared and it screws up your performance. So I used to get these... I used to have these sleepless nights before a race the night before. Now I would get them... I get them 3 months in advance because it's telling me you haven't got your stuff. And it takes 3 weeks to order something, or make, you know, is your license in date? All that junk that you can park and get out of the way.
Yeah.
And then you start getting into routines of learning the track. So I might use Project Car Simulator to go and learn that track and start playing with ideas, work up thoughts towards where our car's going to be, who we're going to be competing with, where you might do an overtake. And I was listening to an interview by Valentino Rossi, which sums it up. And he did this crazy move. He went around the... I can't remember where it was, Valencia or somewhere. He went around the outside of someone at a chicane where you would never go. He jumped a curb and won the race in the last corner of the last lap. And they said, "What? Where did that come from?" He said, "It's strange, but I dreamt about it on Friday and then I did it today."
Wow.
So that's all mental preparation. Yeah, and then it's not a reaction, it's you've planned it.
Yeah. I guess the subconscious works a lot harder than we think it does. But I guess if you prepare, and it is all the little things too, like I would say I used to go through things like that where I'd say, "Oh, I need my guitar picks. You know, I need to order my guitar picks for that tour. I got to make sure I have those cables, blah, blah, blah." And then after that, I could start thinking about the music. You know what I mean? It is kind of one of those things where I guess your brain has to, I guess the subconscious has to feel secure enough in the whole situation, right?
To open up, that's it.
Now, with the book that you wrote, I think it should be mandatory reading, really.
Thank you.
I mean, for a lot of reasons, it's well put together. It's greatly written. I mean, I find it interesting because I'm technically a new driver here in this country, right? Now, in the book, you don't talk about countries or anything like that, but you talk about how to approach certain things. And in a lot of ways, I was thinking, it was a lot of ways, it's kind of a self-help book.
Yeah.
But also a very good book on how to drive as well. Now, when you were writing it, was that kind of one of the things that kind of you started seeing that happening?
I've just made a ton of mistakes growing up, and I just think it's...
See, most people don't own their mistakes, and that's one of the things I found really cool about this book. You're like, look, you know, if you can screw something up, I probably got my hand in that at some point. Yeah. So here, you know, with that, I learned this. You know, I think that's important. You learn from all that stuff.
Painful mistakes, too, you know, especially with cars. You hit stuff. I drove into a truck, I burst a kidney. Well, that's putting it... It's a little exaggerated, but not too far from the truth. And actually... I've done a lot more reading and research about it, and those near misses I've had for others, it's a permanent... it's either they've killed themselves, killed someone, hurt, whatever. And actually, with a minimal bit of effort, you can really steer clear of that stuff, literally. So I really, really enjoyed the research I did, and then I tried to put it in terms that anybody could understand, which is the way that human beings communicate, which is stories. Mm-hmm. So stories from mistakes, fun, crazy stuff I did as a kid, racing, movies, all that good stuff. Just try and bring it to life a little. And I'm glad you like it. It makes sense. Because it's stuff you can read and try.
Yeah, I know. I like good stories. And one of the things I thought when I was reading, it was kind of like when you read one of those old Japanese books by those like martial arts experts, like the kendo experts and stuff like that. They're letting you know from a perspective of, look, I know how to do this, but they're being almost... genteel is kind of almost... I think that's the word I'm looking for. It's like, you're not saying, look, man, I know you're probably going to make this mistake that I made. You're like, you don't even bring that up. It's more like, these are mistakes I made, I've learned from it, and look, and people know you and respect you, so they're like, oh, well, yeah, I'm totally going to be into this story.
Yeah.
And they're in that way that, for me, I could put the book down. I think it's awesome. And you gave me the signed one with the typos.
That's it.
Which I thought was awesome. I still have to get some...
I've got to work on those
typos.
It's
incomplete in my brain. I can't figure it all out.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think breaking it down to the simple stuff, and there's just some things that are so, you know, people make the same mistakes.
If someone's listening and they're driving now, because a lot of people listen to podcasts while they're driving, obviously don't dick around with your settings right now. It's not a good time to do that. But like something they can maybe apply as they're listening to this podcast. I know it's kind of weird sounding like... Yeah.
Well, it's like what you said, the sensei is the warrior's way. You look further ahead and look wider and feel your peripheral vision, and suddenly you've got this whole new world. A lot of people are near focused. It's on the stereo button or anything inside the car. It's looking up, looking wider. And that's something you can start playing with. You can look straight ahead and still feel a car approaching a junction to left and right.
Yeah.
So you've got this 360, because also what's coming up behind you. There's always the opportunity of missing something that's outbraked itself on the way to that traffic light or whatever. I think it's just having that awareness. And particularly, you know, people drive a lot. It's quite easy to just get bored. And actually being alert is quite invigorating, and as well as listening to podcasts.
Yeah, well, that's kind of what we keep some people awake right now, which is a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, I do a lot of that, especially Audible now. I'm well into that. It's great.
Yeah.
Storming through books.
Yeah, that's a good... I mean, I always figure if, you know, the one thing I thought that was lost was the printed page, but now I'm seeing all this great stuff. I mean, I read books on my device now.
Yeah.
You know, I just, when I'm at night, I just do the reverse thing, so it's just the letters are white and the page is black. I mean, I read more now than I think. I read a lot, but I read more probably now with devices than I did with books.
Yep.
Because also my wife was like, no, you read that book already. You got to get rid of it. I was like, no, you don't get it. But now we don't have that argument.
That's good. And you can squeeze it into a Kindle or something like that.
Yeah, and you just get one of those, you know, and I guess you can, it's in the cloud, which I don't know what was up with the cloud. But speaking of the clouds, word has it, right? We can't talk about this, I know this,
okay.
But word has it that your work in movies has reached a level where you're very happy with stuff you were telling me, without mentioning anything. But I wanted to ask you how you got into the movies, because first getting into the movies was it as a stunt driver initially?
Yeah, by accident.
Because you were racing, you were racing stuff.
I was racing in 2007. I was doing a GT championship with a team called Ascari, this amazing supercar, and we'd had some great results. Mm. And I just put the car in pole position. We're racing in Romania on this mad street track, really bumpy, aggressive place. So it's bordered by concrete.
And do they kind of like take the people out of the city and put the track there, kind of thing?
Exactly. Right, cool. Yeah, they block it. Like up. So it's the Monaco of Eastern Europe.
They could do that in Eastern Europe. They're just like, don't come into town today. Why? We're doing a race.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And they probably click their fingers 2 days before, and it happens. Yeah. So we were there, and it went from, you know, very high to very low. Across the checkered flag, session was finished. I had the pole, and a guy hit my car. He came out of the pits behind, didn't see it. There was a crash in front of us, and he took me around, spun me into that crash car. I broke four ribs and a bone in my neck. So that was I came from 130 to a dead stop in a very short space. And with that, the G-forces in the racing are pretty punishing, I couldn't do it with broken ribs.
Yeah.
So I missed the next race, and then they had to get someone else in. So I had about sort of 2 months where I needed income, nothing was going on. And just a meeting I'd had a previous year led to a phone call, and they literally within the week they hired me for this film to double Nicolas Cage. Movie called National Treasure 2.
Little movie called National. Would they steal in that one? They stole the Declaration of Independence in the first one.
It was a map, like a treasure map.
Oh yeah, they lit it to all the gold that was underneath that thing.
Yeah, there was. I think the map was kind of in the dollar bill.
Yeah.
Took them around London.
Good movie, man.
Got chased by Ed Harris, who can drive.
Oh, Ed Harris got some skills.
He has got skills.
I like him. He's a great actor. He always plays like the. Remember The Abyss?
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and The Right Stuff.
He's
great in that. But yeah, The Abyss is awesome. I watched him, he tore off in a Range Rover and had a big camera mount on the side of the car. Really hard, messes with your head. You know, you can kind of gauge how wide your car is to squeeze through gaps with the wing mirrors.
Yeah.
But when you add on a $100,000 camera, which is sitting a foot and a half away, and he either didn't care or just he just had it dialed, he tore off. And skimmed past like a telegraph pole and then a lamppost with a few inches on each side. I thought, wow. And he wasn't hanging around. He just nailed the shot. I wasn't needed for that one.
I'll be in my trailer. It. Okay, man.
Yeah, he was good. But that was fun. So Nicolas Cage, I was in what's called a pod car, where I would sit on the roof with the steering wheel. He was inside.
Yeah, I've heard about these. Nothing. All right, so this is some stuff I tried to explain to my wife badly. All right, so it's a car.
Yeah.
And then it's got on top of the car's hood.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, a hood. There's a steering column and a dude.
You got a dude.
So it's like a double-decker car, right? Yep. So underneath, it's so they can do real, like, shots at a city and not have to really drive at the same time.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So some of these stunt sequences.
Because they used to tow people, right? Or do they fake shit in the background where it's just kind of the same street kind of going behind you all the time?
Yeah, towing is classic. Yeah. Because so the actors are there, they're having conversation, and you see them wiggling the steering wheel, and the scenery's going by. But if you saw the whole picture, basically they're on a trailer being pulled along by a truck, which isn't as sexy as the whatever it is, the Ferrari that they've got mounted on the trailer. So we go one level next, which is to by mounting the pod on the roof, basically just got the car, and it means you can mount cameras everywhere and you can still see the car sliding, smashing, going through traffic.
Because they just edit you off, right?
Yeah, just cuts it out. And so when we're rehearsing, maybe one scene takes a week to get it all dialed in. You've got stunt pedestrians jumping in and out of the way of the car. You've got other trucks weaving in and out of traffic. It would just take it too long and too risky to risk an actor and put them through that. So the pod really puts them right in the middle of it.
Yeah, because the movies they're making are like hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, I remember back when I was younger, someone spent $10 million on a film. Was like, what? What is this Jaws movie?
Yeah.
It's like that kind of thing. But the thing that I find really amazing is, like, in a lot of movies, and we were talking about this, that are coming out now where they could do computer-generated stuff, they're actually going live action.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, it's good for us who love the movies and the real stuff, but it's also good for you, too, because you get to drive in movies and stuff. Why do you think they're doing that as opposed to just going, hey, we're just going to draw? Because you said that in the post they can take things out.
Yeah.
Like, they do magical shit, obviously. So to keep that, like, they also keep a lot of the real stunts in. Is it for, like, you know, is it for, like, street cred where they go, we have real stuff? Or
I think you definitely get street cred. And also, the outtakes are more interesting than looking at a Garner keyboard in the behind the scenes. So this is where we made that scene, and it's a windowless room somewhere in wherever.
Some guy in Van Nuys drawn on an iPad.
It's not as sexy. But I know that with the Bond franchise, they started to play with CGI, and they felt that there was a backlash. That people didn't resisted it because they felt
Moonraker,
it was real deal.
Man. Did you see Moonraker?
I love Moonraker. I mean,
but because we were younger when we saw it, but you look at it now, you're like, what kind of trash is this?
Yeah, we were a lot more forgiving in the 80s.
Yeah, we were. That's the thing. I mean, what was it when Star Wars came out? We were like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like George Lucas had to go redo it. He was so embarrassed, you know.
Well, HD is murderous because the detail is incredible. And actually, I was thinking about this. Like, some of the horror effects from those days are much... sometimes they look comedy. Sometimes they look terrifying. You see every pixel now.
Yeah.
So with the action side of it, I think it's much more impressive knowing there's a human being. So Bond now, there's no CGI. It's all
real. They kind of led the way with a kind of counter CGI. Especially all, like, the opening sequences in all those movies were always like, holy moly.
Yeah. And it's hard to believe, actually, that there is a person in them. And I watched Talladega Nights, actually, which is great.
It's awesome, yeah.
There's a huge cannon roll with a car that just does the length of the pitch straight. It must be 100 miles an hour, going bang, 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 bang. Yeah. And I met Andy Gill. He coordinated with Greg Powell on Fast and Furious 6, and I got to work on that, doubling Vin Diesel. And I met Andy Gill. It's like a hero. He drove the Knight Rider car in the 80s.
Okay,
the TV
the
show.
Yeah,
he's driven it all.
Remember that movie, Hopper?
Okay, yeah.
And there was the guy who directed the Cannonball Run, Ed Needham or Hal Needham.
Hal Needham, geez.
Yeah, he's like that level dude.
They've driven it all. They did the Fool Guy, all this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he mentioned that he coordinated that film. And I was like, wow, you know, and he was talking about how they tried to get that nominated for a stunt award, Tourist Stunt Award. And they just said, well, obviously that wasn't manned. He said, but it was manned. There was a man in there. And they didn't believe, even the stunt board, they reviewed these pieces of footage, like, there wasn't someone in there. It's, yeah, there was a guy in there.
Oh, man.
So they drive them in, and it's so accurate. It may look just crazy, but they have to go in with a cannon, so you give a release button, so you've basically got this big hydraulic slug sitting next to you.
Who is the? I want to hear the idea being pitched to the director. Oh, you want a car crash? It's probably one of those guys like Will Ferrell. Those guys all smoke a lot, way too much weed, and they're probably like, all right, we want the thing to barrel roll from here to those trees over there. It's like 100 yards, man. Yeah, no, just do it. And then how do you facilitate that? I mean, without going, we're going to have to kill people to do it. Like, the driver's going to have to, he's going to have to die, you know?
I think that's where the skill of these drivers, because, I mean, I do very limited of that kind of thing. I've done some turnovers and I've done some cannons, but nothing like that one in Talladega.
By cannon, you mean that's making the car jump,
makes
right?
it flip.
Yeah.
But I've watched, particularly, there's some guys in UK do it brilliantly too, but some of the US guys on Transformers and saying, well, where's the car going to land? And he said, well, from where you've got the camera pointing, I'm going to put it here. And they point to a kind of like 2 meter square area.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, geez, put a piece of black blue tack on the ground and see if he scratches this off.
Oh, man.
And sure enough, they stick it there. So they gauge it just on experience. they drive off either a pipe ramp, so they drive up a straight piece of metal that flips the car over, or you use one of these hydraulic slugs to send it.
And that's built into the car, right?
Built
so it pops and just knocks the guitar up the guitar.
Exactly, like a door hinge, but powered. A door hinge, that flips you over. And it's incredible. And they can put it where they want it. The good guys, they know it from the speed and from rehearsing it. And it's just bang, and over it goes, and there it lands.
Yeah, man, I know about rehearsing like Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple like 150,000 times in my life. But imagine, I mean, you probably have... The rehearsal must be so awesome for people who don't do it every day. Like, what are you doing today? I'm going to practice this car flipping over about 20 times, man. And also the money that's involved in these movies, like, you know, they give you brand new cars to do everything. It's like...
They do.
I mean, is it like still product placement where like a company... I mean, James Bond gets the Aston Martins, right?
Yeah.
And they give him pretty much anything else too, right?
That's it. So the first Bond I did was Quantum of Solace after I'd done that crazy cannon roll.
See, dude, that movie was slept on because water, my brother, is the most important thing in the world. And we're sleeping on it. And then obviously that was a little ahead of its time, that whole story.
Stealing the water. I thought that was a scary plot.
Yeah, man.
But we had 12 cars for that, 12 Astons, all of which got destroyed. So it's quite a big budget.
A lot of dudes crying right now listening. It's like, oh no, they killed it.
It was sad. But actually,
is there a moment though when you bust a car that, because it's probably fun to do it now, right? Where you're like, haha, that car just got.
I love it. After the first one, I was in a pristine car, and it got to me a little that the art department came along with a sledgehammer and some chalk and said, okay, so they'd rip the door off it, but to make this one match where the car was in the movie, the scene.
This is that sequence where they're going in Italy.
We're going through the quarry at that point, and he said, "Yeah, we're just going to do some continuity damage and just cranking it in." So they smashed it to pieces with the sledgehammer. Then they got their punch and they punched a load of holes in the windscreen. Stanley knife. They butchered all the Alcantara, the suede dashboard,
man.
And they made it match. But yeah, I love it. I mean, we got to smash. I'll work on this film, Doctor Strange. We did two Lamborghinis. And I thought that was quite economical, really. But we had to smack it into a lamppost, and then it flew off the side of a road and into smithereens.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I mean, I was driving a Lamborghini recently, and they're pretty much like, they're the engine and the suspension, and then it's just kind of like the cool stuff that's put on the outside of the chassis.
Yeah.
And I don't think if we had a duffel bag, just an overnight bag, we could have put that in the car. There's like a suitcase they give you or whatever. No, with those cars...
You take your Oreos.
Probably my bottle of water in there. But with all the cars... Like, do you think, like, how was it, 14 you said on Quantum Solace?
12, yeah.
12 for that one sequence, right?
They filmed it for 4 months.
Yeah.
It's incredible, for 3 minutes.
So what was the planning like of that? You guys sit down and then you map it out, like, on paper and things like that?
We basically the team get together. So we were out in Italy for about a month before we started shooting.
Just getting acclimatized.
That's it, getting acclimatized, speaking a little Italian, eating ice cream, putting on a few pounds. And took the measured the road, so we've got the usual scanning devices to kind of get the width and length of these things. And then, obviously, you don't have the gradient, but we then took it to a flat airfield and then we recreated that. So we got ribbons and cones and all that sort of stuff. And you can then recreate the crucial thing is the timing. And like it, you know, when you're working with a team of people, but we had about 25 of us in some of these scenes driving different vehicles, and that just meant everybody could get into the rhythm of what we were going to do. And because we had using both sides of the road, overtaking onto through blind corners and everything, you kind of needed to know what was coming before you got there.
Yeah.
So that's how we rehearsed that for weeks. Damn. We burned through, I think, 160 sets of tyres on the Aston, and
wow,
we had these three poor alphas getting beaten up. But
it's, getting shot great. And hit with the puncher and all that kind of
but
stuff.
But preparation, yeah, it's everything.
You could, when you see something that took that long, whittled down and edited to such like a razor's edge, like that, that's all those bond sequences, but that in particular, because you were in it, do you watch it and just be like, yeah, man.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, you cry when you think of the scenes that don't make it, mm-hmm. because the editor has to cut.
Yeah, right.
But that's pretty brutal. I wish they, I mean, it would be wonderful if they released half the stuff we did, because we filmed so much, you know, and you think, oh, how did they make that decision? But no, it's great. It's to see it on the big screen, it's awesome. And the crews and the directors, they're so talented. The way they shoot it, it's so well lit, it's so well shot.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes these things timeless, and it's a little different to TV.
Yeah, well, obviously working on TV, it's like, you know, I've done TV and I've done film, and just as an acting standpoint, everything in film is like, they want to make sure that blade of grass over there is perfect, and they can because they have that kind of budget, that much, that attention to detail. In television, especially when you first started working as the Stig, right? When you watch that show, it's like, wow, they're doing this. And you seem like, and I don't mean to diss the other three dudes, I don't know them, right? But knowing you, it seems like they're just pretty much going, all right, dude, here's some freaking celebrity. They don't know how to drive. They're going to try to drive just 45 minutes. See you later.
Yeah.
And then they go off and have a cup of tea. They come back and you're like, all right, the guy hasn't killed anybody. I got him through this thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like you're kind of like the Kresh. you know what I'm saying? They're like, all right, we've got to do something with this guy before he wrecks the... I mean, when they shot that, what was the name of the airfield?
Dunsfold.
Now, they did a whole bunch of other stuff, like movies on that thing, right?
Yeah, they filmed Casino Royale. A lot of that was there. We rehearsed a lot of Quantum Solace there before we went to Italy. I mean, that's doubled for so many locations because it's got a lot of hangars, and it's pretty useful. We actually filmed Secret Service, Kingsman. We did some scenes there as well.
Oh, when we did the Kingsman, the Huntsman? They actually stuck me in that shop to get me that. Remember that crazy jacket I was wearing?
Oh, yeah.
And then
okay.
You're like, well, you were dressed like that, dude. It had to do with something like that. But I didn't know you were in that movie, too.
Yeah, great.
So,
fun.
What was the movie that you got called for? You were like, they have cars in that? And I know you can't say the one we can't talk about.
Sure. Well, there is one coming up that's going to be exciting. That comes out next year. A boyhood dream for me. But yeah, I'm not allowed to discuss it. But it was a heap of fun. Yeah, there's always, I suppose, I did a piece on John Carter of Mars, which I thought, how many cars are there on Mars?
Yeah.
Of course there weren't, but there was a spaceship flying around. So I got to pilot a camera that was replicating the spaceship. So, I mean, this is it. There's a lot of these shots that are really there. It's all about the stunt performers who are doing their fights or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But it might be getting a perspective or a point of view and flying a camera. And that's when we've got things like the Russian arm. We've got a big Mercedes with a camera on an arm that can rotate 360 degrees around the car very, very, very quickly.
Wow.
You can pitch this thing high and low, so you get these unbelievable shots. And when you think, geez, how did the camera get in there and then out and then move so quickly? It's probably because it's attached to a car or a drone. You know, that's the other way of doing it now. So, yeah.
I told you I did that crazy TV show years ago when I was driving cars around London. They had they call them a jib truck. And it's pretty much a truck with a camera on a big arm and there's a guy kind of working this arm.
On a crane, yeah.
Yeah, a crane. And when I was driving, on the right-hand side of the car. I was in England, and he was sticking the camera in the left-hand side of the
handheld,
car.
Or was it attached to the roof?
No, he was handheld.
Yeah.
No, wait. It was on a crane,
okay.
But he was driving it from inside the truck back of the truck or something.
That's the thing.
Was nuts, man. I mean, and I thought that was like next-level tech, you know, and then you see how some of these things in the films go. I mean, it's almost as if, did you think a lot of times, because they say like tech is driven by entertainment, right? So the cameras are getting better because the movies need them to be better, right? Computer graphics are getting better because they need to be better. Are cars getting more responsive or more powerful or, you know, have different attributes because of movies now. Like, you see, like, Bumblebee, like, no one really liked that Camaro when it came out. And everybody likes that Camaro, you know?
I think, yeah, well, I guess...
Not to diss Camaros, I mean, you know, but...
They've got a lot better. Yeah. I mean, the 70s and 80s, those machines, I love them. I mean, they don't drive brilliantly, but they look... Yeah, Smoking the Bandit, grew up watching those, great chase.
But that was like
films.
A Firebird, though, technically, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Like Trans Am Firebird.
But they rebooted those in the mid-90s, and they were awful. Yeah. Those cars, all of them. Everybody. Yeah. So not
I remember I had a little piece of money back then. I was going to buy one, and I was like, "This is, I can't do it." I was like, "I can't do it, man."
But the new generation, they're amazing. So the new Ford Mustang, the new Camaro, they look good.
They had right-hand drive ones around here. I saw one. If it was like a bullet kind of knockoff, had the dark green and the black rims and shit.
What you want?
Yeah, man.
And they drive properly. Well, and for Europeans, they drive like European cars, but they've got the power and they're rear-wheel drive. So if you're going to pay a fortune for a BMW or a Mercedes, you can go and get an American muscle car that handles and has the grunt. So
and you'll maybe put a kid seat in the back of that.
Yeah, you can. They got space. You can drift it and scare your whole family. Yeah, it's there. How much movies have driven that? I don't know. I guess that's why product placement works. You get to, you know, we love these stories, even if it's fictitious. You can drive something like that, drive an Aston, and feel inside like you're James Bond.
Well, I mean, that's why people buy those old Aston. I used to live in London. A guy next to me had one. I was like, "Why'd you get that?" He goes, "I fucking love James Bond, dude." And like, that's it. You know,
and that car is the DBS.
Oh yeah, man,
it's such a good car. And you see, people can tell. You can tell that it handles well from what you see on screen. Kind of people make their own decision on that.
Well, also, I mean, it's driven by the just best drivers in the world, yourself included. But remember that, what was that one that was a remote control car, like Pierce Brosnan?
BMW.
They did BMW for like one movie, right?
Yeah.
And that was it. Now, even that car got cool points, and that was a totally uncool car.
Crashed it into the Avis. Yeah. Great. I love that. It's what it deserved.
Yeah, it had this little, like, you know, had this little BlackBerry kind of controller and stuff.
But life's imitating that. The tech side is pretty wild at the moment with the self-driving tech that's coming through. Which
you said you were working with some stuff like that. That's kind of interesting, man.
Well, I think it's fascinating because through the period of time I've been testing these different cars to the limit, you get a feeling for how good or bad ABS systems are. Mm-hmm. I remember being disappointed when with one of these cars we were playing, but it was a Lotus. When you spun backwards, the ABS would cut in and you had no braking. It's like standing on a brick. The brakes didn't stop you at all.
Wow.
So if you spun at 60, you would go backwards at 60 until something stopped you, but the brakes weren't going to do it. It's like tyre scrub, maybe. So you realise that's a system fault with the ABS, and a human foot would have done a better job. A few times when I've had systems go wrong, or ABS cut out halfway through a corner and you press the brakes and it makes the car want to spin, or steering failure and stuff like that. Particularly with the newer systems with electric power steering, if you really pitch the car around, steering gives up on you. Those things obviously won't happen on a day-to-day basis for most people, but once you've experienced it, you become a little cynical.
Yeah, so, well, hey, I almost completely ended it all there with that car. Let's fix that, you know.
So, but it's part of it. There's no changing that. And of course, the next level is getting a robot to do the job, and we're creeping up on it.
You know, what was that movie? What was Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone? Remember that, man?
Yeah.
When he's driving the Jimmy Cab, and it's just a computer dude, like, "Hey, I'm Jimmy Cab," or whatever.
He's coming.
Yeah, he's coming. You were saying it's coming quicker than we actually think.
Yeah, I took one already. I took a Jimmy Cab from Heathrow to the hotel that was connected on their loop.
Oh yeah.
In one of these little self-driving pods, and it was very apologetic. It was taking longer than it expected, and it drove me through. It's like a mini train, but it was a pod. I think that all the manufacturers have committed themselves to get it working, and you can see that it will happen in the cities first at low speed. I think it'd be hard for them in rural places, purely because the cameras will get covered in dust or manure.
Yeah, and, saying, because last time we were talking, we were in that car and we were kind of in the countryside. I said, "I live in a rural area," and you're like, "You wouldn't have to really worry about that for a couple of years."
Yeah,
I mean, because you're saying now that, I mean, what is it like? I think every major automobile manufacturer has a product that is either coming out or is out.
Yeah,
that's electric car, and then with electric car, then driverless car. The technologies, what was that thing that happened recently with a Google car? Like, it misunderstood something, and then there was a fatal crash or something like that. But they were like, that has to happen. And it's kind of like, it does in a way. And it's a horrible thing to have happen. Anybody loss of life is terrible. But for a computer to learn that, no, that's just the white side of a panel truck, not the sky.
Yeah.
Something bad has to happen, right?
Basically, the computer systems, they are the teenager learning to drive, making occasional mistake en masse. And, like you say, all the manufacturers are now changing how their drive system, how will the cars be powered. The electric thing's interesting because if everybody suddenly bought tomorrow an electric vehicle, they wouldn't be able to plug them. How would they get from A to B? They wouldn't get. There's not enough charging points. But then the new solar charging and storage is coming. It's just got to catch up a little. But that's why it seems to be this. I think the intermediary is hybrid, so you've got a combustion with electric working together. Yeah, it's pretty effective.
Yeah, those things are. I mean, I remember when the Prius first came out and Leo DiCaprio got one. It's like, it's next level, man. I was like, yeah, okay, but it's ugly, man.
And less efficient than a diesel.
Yeah,
So it wasn't that great at the beginning.
I knew the idea behind it. He's very, he's all about that kind of stuff. And I knew his point. But now the cars that are coming out that are, I guess, what do they call them, green?
Yeah.
They're actually, they're like, some of them are 100% green, man.
Yeah. Electric, I mean, geez, the Teslas are around 300 miles.
That's what they were saying, that's the outside.
Range, yeah.
Yeah, that's the range everybody wants to hit, right?
But actually, you never use really more than 60% of your battery because it takes a hell of a long time. If you deplete it to 80%, it takes a long time to go to 100.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite quick. Yeah, and if you go below 20, it takes a very long time. So what you really try to work is between 20 and 80%.
That's your sweet spot for the battery charge.
Yeah, so you could do 300 miles, but really you don't want to get below 20, and you never want to charge it full. And if you do it that way, you can charge quite quickly. I mean, it's rare though. How many people really have to do those big long journeys all the time? And if you can work it out right, you can either charge it at home or you get a fast charging point. You kind of find a way. But I think, wouldn't it be amazing if everyone can draw power from solar panel, save it?
I mean, didn't homeboy Elon Musk say that? He built a solar panel.
Solar tiles. Yeah,
that's cheaper than a roof tile, which I think is amazing. That's all right. That's what we need, more dudes like him. And I'm glad he's not a Bond villain, although, he could be in a future film. But, his cars, he started making them looking good and appeal to people who love automobiles. And that's the thing, I thought there was a disconnect with all that kind of stuff. And I'm kind of for the ecology. I got children, I want them to have, a good life on planet Earth with grass and some fresh air and fresh water.
Yeah.
So I'm down with that, but I still like the look of a nice car.
Yeah.
And whenever they started, when they started doing it, they only kind of made them for, like, for lack of a better term, like English teachers with too many cats, you know what I'm saying? I don't mean to diss English teachers with too many cats, but it seemed like it was like a bumper car looking car.
Yeah, no, it's too straight. Yeah. What's good, I mean, and DiCaprio got involved with this, the Formula E series, so they look a little like Formula One cars with battery power. One of the things,
they're quick, dude.
They're pretty quick. They're not quick enough yet, but they're getting there. It's kind of laughable. They have to change cars halfway through the race because it runs out of battery, which doesn't look good, but they've already got a handle on it. The next battery, you can do the whole race on one car. So the evolution is so rapid that their speeds are going to come up every year. So they do 140 mile an hour now. Probably in 2 years, they're going to be doing 175, then 180, and sure enough, you give it 10 years, they'll be doing Formula One speeds with electric power. And they're developing the systems of the future.
A lot of them can, I guess, retain charge and charge a battery while the wheels are turning as well, which is another thing. Didn't Elon Musk say he's coming out with a new battery now or something? So that might be the whole big breakthrough.
Well, the other one is you could do a smart road where you charge on the road's got the power in it.
Yeah, like a strip, So where do you envision people who like driving being in 10 years? Because I think, didn't you tell me, like, you could drive if you choose to?
Yeah.
you'd have to choose to drive. Meanwhile, everybody else is sitting like, looking in their phones and shit.
I hope that you can still do it. I guess it'll be a smaller percentage. I know people are addicted, aren't they, to the screens, the small screen. So for them, maybe they won't care if there's a steering wheel in the car or not. It's just a Jimmy car, and Jimmy does the driving, gets you there, and you work yourself to death or get some more Facebook time. But for good roads, I want to be driving it, and especially if while the systems are learning. In bad conditions, I'd rather be in control of my destiny, so the autopilot can wait. But yeah, I guess off-road probably, and meet either on a in your 4x4 and some mud, particularly in the US where you've got the space. I don't see the Ford 150 dying out anytime soon.
That's a car, right?
You guys have got crazy statistic. Actually, I think it's the majority of your roads in the US are not paved.
Yeah,
it's off-road.
Yeah.
And in that environment with dust flying, cameras can get blocked, whereas human eyeball is still, after a few million years, on top. And maybe less so in the UK. Obviously, Monaco is 100% tarmac.
Mm-hmm.
A robot can handle that. So well, it really
depends.
Yeah,
we figured they'd be handling that already over in Monaco.
Yeah. So I might have to go and hang out in Colorado.
Darling, I need to go to show pod. Well, Jimmy Cab's waiting for you, honey. But that is something I didn't really think about that in the United States. I mean, also in the United States, people are still kind of, I don't want to say a little bit backwards about the idea, but it's not sold 100% because I just think people are, you know, that whole libertarian streak of Americans. You know what I'm saying? You live there, you know how it is. So in a lot of ways, if it makes your life easier, and I'm talking about in a European mentality or a British mentality, it makes your life easier and it's safe, okay, let's give it a shot. Yeah. And America's like, whoa, hold on. Why are you trying to tell me what to do with my life?
Well, that's,
you know, someone starts saying that, you're like, okay, guess no one's going to be having driverless cars in America for a minute.
I think in the cities, because look at Uber. Mm-hmm. It's so prevalent in the, you know, LA, mm-hmm. places like that. I could see that it would easily happen because what's the, you know, for the consumer, what's the difference? It's actually nice having conversation, though. I think that's a sad thing that these guys are going to get replaced.
Well, like you said, people really got to check their Facebook status while they're in the Uber on the way to the club from dinner.
That's it. But outside, you know, everywhere in between New York and LA, I think freedom rules, and you're going to be out in your truck doing what you want to do at the wheel, and I think that's going to stick around. And the same here. There's you go, as soon as you go out the cities, it's pretty real.
Yeah, I thought that that when you said, the rule thing, because they'll get dusty, it'll get dirty, these mirrors and the cameras, I was like, duh, of course. I didn't even think about that until you started talking about it with me. And then I started going back and thinking about all the different really scary, incorrect things people said about, like, car traveling. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, we didn't wear seatbelts, man.
Yeah.
Seatbelts get you killed. That's what I heard. And if you did have a seatbelt, it was just the one that went across your waist, like in an airplane.
It's for show.
Like the one in the airplanes, for show. Christ. Yeah. If an airplane's going to crash, that one little bell going across your lap, it's going to cut you in two.
You could have proper crashes in those with those bench seats.
Yeah.
There was no, even in the front row, you could fit all the whole family on the on the front seat.
And, you know, drive through liquor stores. I mean, you know, cars still have ashtrays in all the armrests, which is kind of bonkers. Because, like, in this country, it's illegal to smoke in a car with children or people under 18, right? So all these little tabs of, like, freedom that has been taken away, or actually things we have learned about ourselves, we don't do dumb shit anymore. Like, you can't drink and drive. I mean, obvious things like that. But, like...
But where does it stop?
Yeah, where does it stop? Because you said the ABS thing, it's meant to help, right?
But it doesn't. It kind of... It's very hard to put an argument against ABS without sounding like a freak of, you know, someone who enjoys danger. But actually,
it seems like there's more danger in it than
there is. At least, so according to the studies that I've read, and maybe I've only read the ones I liked, but people could stop faster before the ABS happened. Mm-hmm. It gave you a few more scares, but you were more connected to what the car was doing. ABS made it easier. But you didn't stop any sooner, and actually people then abused the system and would brake in the middle of a corner and end up flipping over a hedge, where you're more likely to turn over the car and cause yourself further injury. So that side of it, the tech didn't really help, but it's built in now to all the other systems that control the car. If it's if you get a skid on ice or whatever, the car will try and fight for control for you. Mm-hmm. But it is things that are being taken away from you.
It's like the new fighter planes. They can't fly. They're
fly
like
by wire.
Because they're aerodynamically not capable of actual gliding. You know.
Yeah, and if you ask the pilot, they'll say exactly the same thing as me, which is that because of the fly by wire system and because of the computer, you have to be a better pilot now to fly them. To know you can't feel the limit. You don't feel anything in the rudder.
Yeah, the stick ain't moving around. The wheel's not jutting or whatever.
Which same problem we have with the electric power steering as opposed to hydraulic. You don't feel the tire when it's skidding. You've lost connection. So. For me, the best cars are really anything predating 2010.
Mm-hmm.
After that, we're slightly going backwards. It's a tough one. So buy old.
Buy old. Yeah, I mean, I got an older car. I never really bought new cars because, you know, I never really had a car in the city, right? That's probably why I didn't really drive a whole lot. But when people buy new cars, they got so much... I mean, the computer's pretty much running the car. Like, I know my way around from when I was in the Marines. I know my way around an engine, a car engine, like an old engine. You know, you lift it up, you go, oh, that's that, and you can kind of work around it. Now, like, I mean, I used to have a Cayenne. I opened it up, it was all sealed in plastic.
Yeah.
With, like, a little thing right there where you could put your washer fluid. I was like, oh, wow.
And there's more that goes... I had to phone up Audi... it was from the dealer. I had an A5, and so look, I'm really embarrassed. I can't find the dipstick. Just make whatever one line joke you want to make, and that'll be done. He said, "No, it doesn't have one." He said, "It's got an electronic." They said, "It's got an electronic sensor, and often it's faulty." So I was pouring oil into this thing because the beeper said to, and then overfilled it. He said, "It'll just spew it out the back, and that's fine." So yeah. You have to take it back to get a light bulb changed. So the days, and again, it's a lack of connection. It's a kind of everything is sending us towards something where the car does it for you, or tries to. But
that's one of the things that when I was growing up, you know, especially in the United States, cars equaled freedom, and freedom was American. And I know that was pretty much with every young person, probably when they first got a license, they felt that rush of freedom and stuff like that. And with that, I guess, comes a lot more regulation that we bargained for.
And snooping.
Yeah.
It's going to be the most heavily snooped on. I mean, you look at your iPhone.
Yeah, well, they've got those new apps that you can get for your car to make you be a more conservational driver, or a better driver, where they kind of pretty much eavesdrop on you. They tell you, you're speeding here, tickets in the mail. You know,
your iPhone's listening to you. It's watching what you eat, where you go, what you do. And of course, this next device is gonna know everything, because it's gonna know everywhere you've travelled to. I don't know. That side of it's a little spooky. Not to mention the hacking. Could go on. There could be someone in another continent having fun.
I saw something the other day, but someone they hacked into a Google self-drive car and drove it into a ditch just to say they could do it. And they weren't. I mean, it wasn't malicious. It was like some guys 10 miles away doing it within conjunction.
But yeah, they hacked, I think, a million Fiats.
Wow.
And played with the. I think they had a control of things like braking and power, which is relevant.
Yeah, that's real relevant.
Where you're going, yeah. And they can make a Tesla, what is it, I watched some guys, they could make it accelerate and stop, and they could open the hood. Was it the hood or the trunk? When you were driving. Stuff that's quite distracting.
Yeah, the hood just popping up in front of you, kind of obscuring your view, and then the brakes not work. See, all those things, I guess, we wouldn't have that problem if we just realized, I guess, more often than not, that we're just monkeys with alcohol. And then if we curb the alcohol, we could probably, you know, drive cars without having computers do it for us.
Yeah, that's a big one. And actually, I still love driving. I've got a very, very basic Land Rover, which has got nothing on it except what I do. And actually, even from just driving a few modern cars, I'm always expecting it to beep when I'm reversing.
You
start to play with those systems and you get reliant on it. I just love it. I just love the simplicity of it.
Like, I wanted to get an old Defender, right? Yeah. And I still may. I mean, the car I have now is basically the family car, right? Because you saw the two car seats in the back. I got my kids, you know. So for me, I just want to make sure that they're safe. And when I first got that car, it's a Range Rover, and I got back-ended by some kid in like a little Fiat or whatever in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. I was stopped waiting for someone to turn off in front of me.
So you were fine.
But I was fine. The kid's car was totaled. Yeah. And he was like, my phone is bent. And I was like, all right, kid. And I just saw the kind of like, you know, the way that car is like a tank. Yeah. That's what I think is like what I need in a vehicle right now. And I know those old Defenders. I mean, from being in the Marines, I hung out with a lot of those English cats that had those Defenders. And I was like, what do you guys got on the side of those things? They're like, gas cans. It's like, oh, really? So they're like, yeah. I was like, all right.
Good luck.
No, well, those were the Royal Marine guys. They had all the luck in the world.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, for real. So to kind of like... to talk a little bit about, I guess, your ethos. I mean, we did talk about, like, you know, how you approach things. I think it's really important. And the book kind of touches on it a lot, too. And the reason I liked hanging out with you after reading the book, too, is like, I like the way you look at the world, right? And we did touch on it just now about the freedom of it all, and the liberty, and things that people can do, given left to their own devices in a lot of ways, right? In a society now that kind of doesn't value a hard day's work, or, you know, practicing something to get good at it because you could play guitar star online or whatever it is, those kind of look.
Yeah.
I think it's coming back now, people actually having integrity and having a strength of character and putting things together for themselves. And like I said, acquired knowledge. I think I said that before. It's like a big word of mine now. But it's shit that you're not as smart as your phone. You know what I mean? Like stuff you actually retain.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I took from you on this, is like, you're one of those dudes that's, you've been doing it your whole life, and now I think people are starting to realize through that whole, I guess it was like over the last 20 years with the internet, I guess it was exponentially thrown out there, we could do all this crazy stuff, but now we're kind of coming back, like the rubber band's pulling us all back into the core human values of doing stuff, especially with cars, and cars are...
There's so much junk online about driving,
I
couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, it was blah, 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 you know.
Yeah. I remember this. There was I saw this lady. It was in the winter here, and I was in the middle of nowhere, and she was trying to get down this hill on ice. And I was watching it. It was incredible because the back end was sliding everywhere, and I was trying to work out what. So I could see she was going to be in the ditch. So I went up. She's about 75 years old, and I said, "Can I help you? Can I help you do whatever it is you're trying to do? Looks like you're trying to kill yourself or whatever."
I can help you do that.
Said, yeah. She said, "I'm trying to get to the bottom of the hill." And I said, "Yeah." I said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Well, my husband told me to use the handbrake, you know, which just makes the rear tire skid." Yeah. Now, technically, on a flat, that could help. So there was a kind of a tiny piece of information that could be relevant, but was the worst thing she could do on this hill. And you just realise there's lots of tiny pieces of information or advice that go out, you know, sort of urban myths of driving and the sheer junk on the internet. And I thought, no, got to do something for real. And actually, even looking then, when I went to find out about how our driving test in Britain was created, it goes back to a book that was made for the police in the 1930s on how to drive a car with a steering wheel that was as big as a yacht. It had 4 horsepower. It did like 30 mile an hour. It was completely irrelevant for driving a modern car.
Perfect.
So yeah,
what we're doing now.
Let's update, and that was kind of fun. But yeah, there is, and the physics of it are universal, so it works in whether you're US or Britain. Ice is the same, tarmac is the same, and then your human approach, you know, is unique to each person. But really, we're all trying to do the same thing: is do things well.
Yeah, and also with a little bit of panache as well, man. I mean, there's a style content, and a lot of times it's style over substance. But with someone like you, you can see the substance is there. And when you taught me how to drive that really fancy car, man, I took that the confidence that you gave me in saying if I know the basic elements of how to make this car stop and make this car go and do it safely. Sorry, R2, he doesn't agree with me.
He's coming.
Yeah, he's coming, man. I went the next week and I was driving these old, like, 1920s Bentley and an old 1920s Ford and stuff like that. And I had no business being behind the wheel, I think, but I handled it, Ben.
That's real deal. Yeah. They're hard.
But I handled it because I had I got a little boost from your book, man. Yeah. So I think anybody who drives a vehicle, if you don't drive, if you're too young to drive, read this, and when you go to drive, you'll know what's up, and we'll have a new generation of people who know how to fucking drive.
I hope so. It could be great, because we can all communicate on that subconscious level.
Well, absolutely, man. We need more connection on that, man. You want a cookie, man?
I'm tempted,
yeah. I'm gonna half these suckers.
I'm gonna bite into one of those.
See if you get these guys to sponsor the podcast, man. That'd be great right now.
I'm not gonna try that golden one though.
Yeah, we'll go.
I was robbed of that.
My boy Fast, he lives out here too. He's from Brooklyn. There's like a thing called like an AmericanFoods.com or something like that. They had everything. So, I mean, you said you spent a lot of time when you were younger there. Or you remember like Mountain Dew or something like that, you can still get that stuff.
Twinkies.
Yeah. They got Twinkies local now, man.
You know what the killer was those fruit pies?
Capacity,
but
yeah, but they were half a
icing sugar.
Oh yeah. That was
did you ever look at the back of that? I went back.
No, that's the whole point. You never look in the back of those, dude.
It's 800 calories.
Wow.
It's that tiny fruit slice. Well, who's it makes it? It's got the cherry, apple, and lemon.
No, I know. Is it Drake's? Drake's cakes?
Not Drake's.
Then it's Hostess.
Not Hostess. I don't think it was Hostess. It was the fruit pie. I flipped one of those over and thought, wow, that's only something you can eat up to the age of 20.
Yeah, man. Then it all gets different, man. Well, dude, I appreciate you taking the time on a beautiful day to hang with me.
I love
and talk, man.
No, it's been great. Well, we need to get out. We need more track time.
Yep.
Get in some more quick cars. Get out on a Grand Prix track, maybe.
You know what? I think it would be a good TV show, like you and me rolling around, finding cool places to drive cars. And, you know, what I'll do is I'll set up, like, the restaurant for the evening.
Driving
and stuff. You do the heavy driving and having fun with all these cool cars, and I'll, like, make reservations, and we'll go out and talk about the cars over dinner.
That's a plan.
Yeah, man. We'll start the Amalfi Coast.
I think the Amalfi, and also, actually, Scotland now as well.
Yeah?
North of Scotland. They've now got their equivalent of Route 66.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's called the 500. It joins up all the north coast, and you can just go from, you know, one fishing village to the next.
Oh, dude.
Hitting some seriously good food. And it's, you know, it's sunny. It's kind of, you wouldn't think so, because it's...
Well, no, it's up north, man.
Being cold, but...
It's cold smold, man.
But Amalfi, and then Route 500. Sure.
Well, yo, if anybody's listening and you're driving, you'll drive better if you read Ben's book. So we get it. It's called How to Drive.
Stay safe.
Thanks, Ben.
Be lucky.
Stay classy.
Thank you.
Well, look at 59 minutes on the button, son. Damn.
You're the man.
We're perfect.
What a dude, what a gentleman. And I like that, that TV show idea too. That might work, bro. So stay tuned for that one. So as you all know, my city, New York, is my first love. And it's about this time of year, I take a little hiatus to go back to the homeland with the famo. So while I'm chilling in Brooklyn, I'm taking a short hiatus from the pod for a couple of weeks. And I'll be back in September, no doubt, with some awesome episodes that I captured on the island of Manhattan. Some really interesting people I got lined up. Until then, you can catch me on the social media nonsense. Follow me on Twitter at OfficialHuey and Facebook at OfficialHueyMorgan. And I'll be going live for your delight over there. So be sure to hang. I do a little back and forth, a little Q&A with my peoples on the Facebook Live. And hey, I'm going, but I'm going to be back. So stay subscribed and take this opportunity to leave us one of them nice reviews. It helps new folks find us, frankly, and help spread the word. Tell your friends and check the back catalog. Enjoy the rest of your summer. Huey off the record fans, I love you, and I'll see you in September on your special device. Until next time, y'all stay classy. Mm-hmm.